Hello everyone, this is Tom Uren and I'm here with the Gruck for another Between Two Nerds discussion. G'day Gruck.
G'day Tom.
Today's episode is brought to you by Stairwell, who make a file analysis platform. And that sounds really boring, but it's actually an amazing product that allows you to slice and dice all the files that your company ever receives. I'd also like to thank the Hewlett Foundation's Cyber Initiative for their support. So, Gruck, you messaged me the other day and you pointed out this tweet from Arun Mir. And
all right,
it struck a chord.
Yeah, so Arun was making this observation about how people can confuse a product with a principle. And what he was getting at is that asset inventory, it's one of the big vendor verticals these days, I guess. And his observation was that people seem to be confusing the security principle of know yourself with know your asset inventory. And they seem deceptively similar, but they're not. And it's the sort of thing where, like, you know, in theory, knowing your asset inventory is a never-ending task, right? Because you don't necessarily have this sort of snapshot in time. It's always changing. So it's this never-ending treadmill, and you can spend all of your time and all of your money just chasing that without actually knowing what it means.
Yeah. So when you sent that tweet to me, a couple of things occurred to me straight away.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe in the fullness of time. I don't know. One of them was that there's a difference between a map and knowing where to go.
Mm-hmm.
So an asset inventory, ideally, it gives you a map of the territory. It shows
right.
you what's where, so you can see the landscape, but it doesn't necessarily tell you what you need to do about the landscape. It's a kind of precondition for the next step.
Right.
The other thing that occurred to me is that the big telco here in Australia, Telstra, produced what it called the five no's of cybersecurity, where no was knowledge, K-N-O-W.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when Mike Burgess was involved in Telstra security. So Mike Burgess, formerly the head of the Australian Signals Directorate. So he's got a perspective on security that's informed by both public sector secret intelligence and also private sector working on the coalface type security. So the five no's were: know the value of your data.
Right.
Know who has access to your data. Know where your data is. Know who is protecting your data. And know how well your data is protected. So value, who, where, what's the protection, and how well is it protected? So first of all, that's a very data-centric way of looking at things.
It's what I would expect from ASD, I have to say. It's a very, we steal information. And so, you know, based on that as our guiding principle, here's how I think about security.
So in all fairness, I think this is a couple of years old as well. So I think it was published before the ransomware epidemic. And I imagine today
right.
that you would have a different kind of organizing principle as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this seems very data centric. But I think the thing that was interesting is that it doesn't mention devices or asset inventories at all. And the other thing that occurred to me is that very early on when I joined Aspie, which is a think tank, and I had more of a public profile, I was speaking to someone and he said, if you ever become a CISO, make sure that the first thing you don't do is conduct an asset inventory.
Okay. And why was that?
Well, I think he was sort of kind of agreeing with the idea behind the five no's, which is that it's not the assets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was talking about a device kind of asset inventory.
Right, right.
The point he was trying to make is that it should be focused around what's important to the business. Like, what do you actually care about? So the first thing is, what do you care about and how is that protected?
I'm curious as to whether that actually translates purely to cyber as well as it does in the physical world, because sort of I was just talking about this with someone on Mastodon, was that, again, one of the great things that Arun has said is that, like, hackers go after valuable systems, not vulnerable systems. right? So if you're trying to lure a hacker into doing something with some sort of deception thing, it's not about putting out a vulnerable system that they're going to hack because it's easy to hack it. It's about putting something that they want to access. I'm thinking about how the hackers would look at a network. As an attacker, there's a value to an asset inventory in terms of what are the things available to me to use, right? Is there a box I can dig into and use as my long-term host on this environment? Is there something that gives me access to other networks that are linked to this one that I want to be able to use? And so you're going to look at that from a slightly different point of view, right? So if you're a business looking at your assets and you can go, well, that test Linux box that we don't use for anything is not valuable to the business. We don't really care about it. It's something that the developers use to play around on, right? So you might not pay any attention to it because it's not part of your core business. But as an attacker, that might be the perfect host to dig into and establish yourself. So I think that there's a bit of a mismatch of looking at things only from the defender's point of view.
Right. Well, as you were talking, I was thinking that for an attacker, and you know, any asset is potentially an opportunity, and perhaps you only need that one opportunity. Where, from a defensive point of view, if you don't have any idea that it even exists, you can't mitigate it. So, I certainly wouldn't argue that it's a bad idea to have an asset inventory. I don't want to give out that impression. I just think it's not the to Haroon's point, it's not the main thing. Like it's a prerequisite for other purposes.
It's a step along the way. We're advocating a sort of use the force approach. You need to blind yourself and just instinctively block where you know the attacks are coming from.
The other thing that occurred to me was Rob Joyce, when he was head of TIO, said that the reason attackers win is they because they know the network better than defenders.
Right.
And so I have this kind of tension in my head where Rob Joyce, yes, he knows what he's talking about. Knowing the network is important, yet at the same time, I think that knowing just the nuts and bolts of the network isn't as important as understanding what it is you're trying to actually protect.
Right. I think from the way that he's looking at things as well is that if you're an attacker and you can find that forgotten about host that you can dig into and sort of, you know, you perch there, and then from that point, you can branch out and get to other things. You know, like that's the sort of thing that's useful to you. So I think as an attacker, the nuts and bolts are important. But as a defender, the nuts and bolts are sort of, they're table stakes.
Right, yeah. For an attacker, the nuts and bolts are opportunities. But for a defender, they can be distractions. And so it's not that you don't want to do anything with them. It's that you want to figure out what's the most important thing to do.
Right.
Because there's probably an infinite amount of stuff you could do to make your
given your limited resources, given the resources that you have available, what is the best thing you can do? And it's probably not secure absolutely every single thing that you possess.
That's right. I mean, that would be great if you could, but it's probably just not practical. Whereas for an attacker, the priority is to get access. That's a kind of a prerequisite, a first step. And ideally, you want the best place, but if you can't get it, you're
right.
And so maybe that's
if you can
the
work
kind
with
of
it, you know.
Yeah, that's the kind of asymmetry here.
Yeah, and I think actually that asymmetry sort of plays into another thing as well with the deception stuff that we've talked about before, which is that as an attacker, when you are building up your asset inventory of sort of what you can hack and what you don't care about, that is an information asymmetry. So when you're finding out things that exist, you don't know which things are legitimate, which things are important, which things are traps, and so on. That can be exploited as well from a defense point of view. So that's sort of worth knowing about. But one of these things about these principles that I'm reminded of is when I was talking to Dmitry Alparovich at one point, and I told Dmitry sort of my eight noble truths of information security. And he said, okay, that's all well and good, but how do you allocate budget according to that? show me on a spreadsheet how you use those. And
So do we need to know what the Eight Noble Truths were?
Right. Okay. So at one point, I sort of came up with what I call like the Eight Noble Truths. These are sort of like, these are perennially true about information security. And so the first one is that compromise happens. Mm-hmm. The hacks happen. That's it. And so essentially what you need to do is, based on that, you need to make them cost more, yield less, harder to use, easier to find, analyze them, and then stay awake. So that's they're very, very condensed. They used to be a lot longer, but then...
Yep. So on the list you sent me, the number 8 one says off by one error. Does that mean it really should be the 7 noble truths? Because, you know, 7 actually is better than 8.
It's 8 noble truths because 8 is a good number. Yeah. The thing is, like, each of these are sort of, you can unpack them and dig deeper into them. And none of them, by the way, happen to be know yourself. But right. I think that cost more, yield less, harder to use, and easier to find are all about sort of knowing yourself helps with those, right? So things with like cost more are you want to make it hard to break into, but then yield less would be what we would call impact containment or compartmentalization. You know, so that the cost of the compromise is very expensive and the result is very poor. That's sort of what you want to strive for. And then you want to make it so that not only is it poor, but it's difficult to exploit beyond that. And then once they've gained access, it's hard for them to remain hidden. And then, you know, the analyze and stay awake is that you want to review what's happened so that it doesn't happen again. Right, you want to sort of learn from your past, learn from your mistakes. And then once you've done these things, it's not a fire and forget. You still have to remain vigilant and awake and aware and keep monitoring. So those are the core things with InfoSec.
So I was wondering if the 5 knows your noble principles, they're really about trying to get at what's important in a security program.
Mm-hmm.
So the 5 knows is very data-centric. Yours is a bit more agnostic to what it is.
Right.
So what I like about the 5 no's is that even though it's very data-centric, to me, you could sort of rewrite it in a way that is basically figure out what's important and figure out how to protect it, which at a very, very high level, I think just makes sense because what else are you going to do, right?
Right.
Like it's almost self-evident.
Well, those are sort of the principles of counterintelligence in a way. Right. So it's like it's very much a, you know, what information do you have? What is the most valuable information? How can an attacker gain access to it and then, you know, stop them from doing that? It's very established rules sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it, I guess, because it's so close to it feels like a fundamental truth. If you've got something important, mm-hmm. you protect it. And I think your 8 noble truths is one step further away in that it's a bit more practical, a bit more tactical, but you can still see a straight line to, well, you've got to protect the most important things. And I think by the time you get to asset inventory,
mm-hmm.
that's part of what you would want.
Right.
Is it the most important thing? Is it something you need to have? It kind of depends on the rest of the architecture that you've got.
Right. This reminds me of a story that's sort of tangentially related. So there was a photojournalist in Northern Ireland during the Troubles, and he would be sort of embedded with the army. He'd be taking pictures of all of these things. And he says that one of the things is that the officers would be very, very concerned about secrecy, but only for specific things, right? So they didn't want him to sort of take a picture of the radio that might leak the frequency that they're using, or things that from a military point of view would be very OPSEC, the things that they wanted to keep secret and secure. But they didn't care about things like taking pictures of soldiers beating an old woman, for example, because that would not be a secret that would have to be protected in the same way. So what he said was that they had this focus on secrecy, but for the wrong things.
Right.
Things that no one actually cared about but them. whereas the things that people did care about weren't things that they had classified as secret, so that they didn't really pay attention to it. So he was able to get a lot of these really amazing photos of this real sort of human drama and human tension in that, because it was not what these guys thought mattered, even though it actually was, right? And it struck me a little bit on the, you know, if you look at things and, you know, if you know what's important and you can figure out what you need to protect, I sort of wonder if, you know, can you? Maybe that's actually the first hurdle, is actually figuring out what's really important.
Well, that makes me think about when I was in defense. There was this tension between senior management and the everyday worker bees, in that they had, I think, different priorities. So the average person in operations wanted to get a mission done.
Right.
And invariably, senior management would talk about the Canberra Times test. So the Canberra Times is the local newspaper in Canberra.
Okay, right.
And the idea is that there's just some things you can do that, if they become public, just the publicity is really terrible. So it doesn't matter what the mission is and whether the operation is justifiable. What matters is the potential public perception of that mission.
Right.
If it were to be revealed somehow. And I guess for some things, you have to assume that maybe they will be. Like, that's a factor, at least.
Right.
And so, of course, everyone at the lower levels were like, the Canberra Times test, that's just bullshit. But to me, it's an understanding of what actually is important for the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a public service organization, maintaining your credibility and reputation in the eyes of the public is tremendously strategically important.
Right.
Like, if you lose that, it doesn't matter how well you're doing in the mission. Like, you're done.
You've lost. Yeah, right. Well, this is actually a thing that happens with terrorist organizations as well. And it's the exact same thing of that. The guys at the lower level, the ones who do the actual attacks and stuff, they know that the reason that things aren't working out is that we're just not attacking enough, or we're not attacking hard enough or enough places or violently enough and all that stuff. Whereas the guys at the top have a political understanding of that, you know, when we use violence, it has these positive things for us and these negative things for us. And we need to balance, when do we do this? Like, if we're going to do an attack, it needs to benefit us more than it hurts us.
Right.
And so they have this political understanding, and that seems like a weakness to the guys on the ground, who just see the, like, why wouldn't we attack? Doing attacks is what will win us this war, when, you know, it's not. But I think it's the same thing. It's that when you get to a level of political understanding, restraint, and that becomes actually as if not more important than doing things. And it's hard to have a perspective that understands that if, you know, you're not at that level. You just see it as weakness.
What I was going to say is to bring it back to asset inventory, I guess the people that Haroon is probably talking about are the equivalent of those kind of foot soldiers, where they see asset inventory as the point. Whereas if you're a CISO, hopefully you understand that asset inventory is part of the picture.
I think it's also, you can get very distracted with metrics and things like that, which
right.
I think is a constant problem that exists, in that on the one hand, if you don't measure something, then it doesn't exist. But on the other hand, once you do measure something, first of all, you alter what you've measured because you're observing it. But second of all, the measure can become the target. And I think that that's sort of one of those things where you can say, you know, if you start out with, how do we just secure this network? You might go, well, what exactly is the network? Like, what do we have?
Mm.
You know, before we can actually secure it, we kind of need to know what's there. So you can look at that and you can go, okay, well, we need an asset inventory, because that's the first step along this path of figuring out what we have and what we need to protect. But then you can sort of get sucked into, how good is our asset inventory, and how, you know, how automated is it? And, you know, does it produce the best graph, or could we get a better dashboard to show us our asset inventory? And you can get sucked into the sort of never-ending cycle of better and better implementations of step one.
I wonder if there's a kind of dynamic that you assign someone to create an asset inventory and they do really well, and so you promote them. And so the sort of concept of an asset inventory becomes more and more powerful in an organization. And the things that you find hard to do sort of wither away because they're viewed as less successful because kind of by nature they're hard to do. Like, how do you measure your grip on what's actually most important in your organization?
Right. I think that there's a problem as well with when you get budget, you have to spend it, which is one thing. But the things that you can spend it on don't tend to be like the tool that gives you insight into your most valuable parts of the network and how to protect them. Right? Like that's not a product you can buy, but you can buy a product that will have an agent that runs on everything for you. Like you can purchase these sorts of things, and it's easy to end up buying products that do things, but not necessarily, like it's easier to buy products than it is necessarily to achieve security.
Well, I mean, if you're going to decide what's most important to your organization, that's not something you can buy, but it is a massive process, I think, in that there's no one, I imagine there's no one in any organization who can actually just say, here are the most important things. It's actually like a long drawn out process where you probably have God forbid, working groups getting together, talking about what your business
committees, subcommittees
actually does. Like, you know, where do we get our data? Where does it go? I don't know. You'll have to ask Jane or whoever. And then that turns into months and months of work to then decide, these are the five most important things.
Yeah. So I think as well, there's a sort of problem of that. When you're doing this, you're within a system. Like a business has become a system. It's a very large and complicated system. And so you're only going to see it from the perspective of the way that that system sees things. So I think you're going to end up sort of not noticing things that have become so much of the infrastructure, just so deeply ingrained into how it works that they've become invisible. So for example, I'm thinking that a lot of sort of small 3 or 4 person lawyer offices probably don't think of ransomware as a huge threat because their most important thing is, I'd say, their reputation or their relationship with their clients or something along those lines. They're not going to think that the most important thing is how well they secured their file server.
Yeah.
Right? Because they probably don't even think about it as a file server. It's the place where they put the files, like, you know, the shared drive, right? It's not a thing that sort of even occurs to them as part of the business and that it's important. But when they get hit by ransomware and suddenly they're looking at all of the contents of that shared drive getting, you know, spread publicly, plus they no longer have access to it, suddenly the most important parts of the business are no longer the relationship with their clients or the contracts that they've just signed for whatever. It's this data that they no longer have access to and they no longer have control over. So I think there's a danger of the, if you look at your business and you figure out what the most important thing is, then obviously you can protect it. I think there's there's sort of like step two is missing there. You know, the magic happens and you find out what the most important thing is.
Right. So I guess your example about the lawyers to make the point that people engrossed in the business don't even realize that there's IT risks, right?
Right, exactly. And then the people doing the IT stuff probably don't
understand the
business. So they won't sort of quite understand that, yeah, it would be bad if the emails leak, but if the shared folder of contract proposals leaks, then that's fatal to the business.
Yeah, so this all makes me think that it just becomes really, really hard to actually know what is super important. So maybe you should just focus on your asset inventory after that.
Security charge. That seems like it's asset inventory.
That's right. That seems like it's an easier idea. Thanks a lot, Grok.
Thanks a lot, Tom.